Hello, Gary. Talk Shoe is working tonight. It's working at night. Okay, the number is 124-251. Okay? Alright, bye-bye. Okay. Well, hold on. Let me go to the Book of Judges. Alrighty. Well, tonight TalkShoe is working good. That I just went ahead and called Gary. Gary is going to call in. Logan might call in. Let's see. Let me get tonight's number. Let's see. Don't want that number. Let me see. All right. What we're going to discuss tonight. I got 9,002 posts on my forum. Big deal. Okay. Cancel. All righty. Alright, we'll go ahead and put the syllabus on, and then I'm going to go ahead and start the show. Take a sip, and we will start. Heck, get you those tits tonight. Greetings, found sheep of the house of Israel, ye chosen seed of Israel's race, ye who did hear Christ call. Tonight is episode number July 23rd, 2013 of Understanding Dual Seed Line Christian Identity. And for the first time in about 3 weeks, TalkShoe work without a hitch. Now, I didn't schedule it in advance. Literally, I schedule it about 10 minutes ago, called Gary, called Logan, and Gary should be in. Logan's in now, and we were talking a little bit. I was talking a little bit with Logan about what's going on in Detroit. You know, the little mongrel bastard that was, you know, born to the two Jews that are in line to hold the throne of Great Britain, or no longer Great Britain. Essentially, great shit and more like. And from what I gather, they went ahead and said about a month ago, there was a news article saying that Princess Diana was part Hindu Dravidian nigger. You know, from a great great grandmother or something like that. So she was, back when, you know, Britain used to rule India, and that's why they have all these Pakis. Used to conquer Britain, and I guess one of the lords brought back his little notch girl. And, that was what Princess Diana was part of. She's part nigger. So, in any case, let me go ahead and unmute Logan. And unmute Gary. See if it's working. Logan, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm waiting for Gary.
I'm right here.
Oh, okay. Well, it takes a little while. I have to use the Tor browser, but I can hear y'all, though it says that you're not muted. Anyway, let's talk about a little bit about current events. Last week, Detroit, you know, pretty well, Niggertown, declared bankruptcy, and then a county judge for the, wannabe retiree said, no, you can't embarrass Obongo like that. You know, black run America like that. You can't embarrass Obongo like that. Although I don't see where in the Constitution it says you can't, you can't embarrass your foreign nigger Jew president here. I didn't read that in my constipational classes. But, any case, from my gather, Detroit simply has a shortfall all the time of $350 billion, $300 million out of, it has what? About a third is, just nothing more than debt. And they're not going to be able to pay the retirees. They're not going to be able to pay any of them anything. Anything earned pennies on the dollar. So, I mean, they say that in Detroit, when you end up having, a robbery or a rape or whatever, it takes the pigs, 58 minutes to call? Although, the average across the Zogland is about 11 minutes. Well, it takes about, 58 minutes for them to call. Essentially, all you have is you don't have any white people running things, paying into the tax base. You just end up having a bunch of niggers, and they've been allowed to be niggers for about what? Oh, ever since 1967, they had a big race riot, they said, in 1967, to where the National Guard, they had to call in the army in order to quell it. And after that, pretty well, the white people just said, screw it, and they beat feet to other places. Now, I remember in 1981, when I got in the army, you had a whole bunch of people from from Michigan, from down around Detroit and Flint and the rest, and they had no jobs. They had been pretty well, the second major oil shock had taken place in 1978, and I'll think of that as I was driving my big old 1978 Ford F-150 pickup truck. It's a huge truck. It doesn't swing around quickly like that little Geo Metro I got, and it uses a good deal more gas. It probably gets about 10, 11, 12 mile a gallon, if that. And today it was just hot. It was very, very, very hot. So we went and got Roxy her one of her prescriptions filled, and we bought a few things, and then I stopped by Walmart, bought some other stuff, and then I bought me some more cinder blocks, and I bought me some more concrete. And since it's going to thunderstorm, they're talking about major thunderstorms tonight, I went and Andy Donner showed up. Andy, what I did is literally I started this show. I couldn't reschedule it. I couldn't use the Tor browser to reschedule it because it usually figures it's in Europe. And so it's what? Oh, it's tomorrow in Europe right now. It's in the early morning in Europe. It's what? 8 o'clock? It's 3:14, 3:15 in Germany right now. I know, it was 7 hours beyond Central Time when I was stationed in Germany. I mean, I was 7 hours ahead of, my family in Granby, on the farm in Granby, Missouri. Anyway, so the Nimbuster Tards don't really know about it. I don't know if they really want to, because I'm going to be covering the last chapters of Judges. Now, we were talking, in the bowel movement, they were talking a good deal about Derek Black, who was a worthless wigger, who was going ass to mouth with, this Jew faggot named Mark Patak. When the Klingons call each other a Patak, that means a Patak in Klingon is lying Jew faggot. You know what I mean? You Patak. At least that's what I think. They were calling each other a Patak, so I think that's what they were calling. Mark Patak's, fame had extended even to Star Trek here. You know what I mean? But in any case, he was supposedly saying he wasn't a white nationalist. He was going all Lynx and Lamb Gady on on Don Black, and Don Black is, I think, worthless. I think he's a, well, he's David Duke. I call him the Duck. So I call Don Black, I call him the dog, you know, the Duck's dog, and I call Derek Black the Duck's dog's Peckerwood. And from my Garrett, his wife, Chloe Black, used to be married to David Duck, and essentially, I guess, the dog, you know, the dog went ahead and took, I think it's probably, you know, I think he went to prison for David Duke in the early 80s on this stupid notion of invading some nigger island in the Caribbean, and the Duck, you know, the Duck made old, you know, dumb old Don Black take the rap for it. Anyway, married old David Duke's leavings, and, you know, gave birth to little Derek. And you look at little Derek, and I'd repost this, John just posted by this ex-Stormfrontian here. I'm banned for life on Stormfront because I do not get along with, well, the main no-devil nitwit. You have a bunch of them. And there was this guy named Sheldon Emery, and Buddy Tucker says that Sheldon Emery was a race mixer, was essentially married a beaner. He was saying the lack of Mormon, she was a Lamanite or something like that. And I've heard that Dave Barley married Sheldon Emery's daughter. So essentially, she looks like a beaner. Their kids still look like beaners. I mean, you know, I don't know if married Sheldon Emery's daughter, but Buddy Tucker said that, you know, Sheldon Emery was a race mixer. We got this crap. These Jews, they hate the dual seed line doctrine. You know, one of them is a Finnish Jew named Richard Niemela who hangs around Eli James / Joseph Stalin Cuts November. And, he hated Christian identity. He said, dual seed line comes from the Talmud. So way back around 2000, 2001, 2002, we'd say, okay, Niemela, or I'd call him Nema Turd, and Hengist would call him Nema Toad or Nematard, and say, okay, Nematurd, you Talmudic screwer, where in the Talmud does it say you Jews are the spawn of Satan? Name the verse and name the place and verse. And old Niemela was screwed. Niemela couldn't do anything about it, because if he went ahead and said where the Talmud, you know, if he got ahead, you know, proved that what he said was true, that the Talmud said the Jews were in the spot of Satan, he was screwed. We'd say, well, how come you don't believe your own sacred Talmud, you dirty Jew boy, you Talmud screwer? So the Talmud does, in a few chapters here that I, you know, that Willie Martin dug out from the Socino computer Talmud, and Michael Hoffman dug out the Jews. They're sort of like in Albert. They sort of like in Albert Pike's. You know, he was a Jew. What, Morals and Dogma or something like that. They sort of hint. They sort of say that they are descended, or they serve Lucifer. They're descended from Lucifer. I mean, the Scottish Rite Masonry sounds a good deal like the writings of the Talmud, which is probably no accident. Anyway, so Nemo is pretty well screwed. I mean, he couldn't do much about it. And so what he does, he would hang around Mark Downey and Debbie Downey. And when old Debbie got Andy Anderson to ban Willie Martin, even though I wanted Willie Martin to quit that holy war forum here, I got mad and I, you know, told Hengist, you know, he lived in Olympia, Washington. I said, fly me some shit on that bitch. I mean, not, I don't mean just a little dried rat turd. I want a big stinking pile. He went out and found out that, well, she used to be Debbie Badinsky, who was the wife of the Washington State Grand Dragon, you know, supposedly the head leader of, you know, whatever clan was up there, and he let her claim to be the Klaloth. Now, around clansmen, women are not given offices. They can serve as auxiliaries, but they are not supposed to be bossing men. I mean, even Baptist clansmen know better than that. But here he was letting her be the Klaloth. And, you know, Mark Downey was called the Clud, or the Chaplain, sort of like Liar Bill, Mumps Nut, the Clueless. Any case, you know, he pretends to be a chaplain. He is not a chaplain. But moving on, Hengist found out two things. Found out that essentially Debbie Badinsky was now Debbie Downey, and in between the time she was Debbie Badinsky to where she asked for and got the divorce, she was living with Meerkat Mark's parents' rental house here. And that was the thing that could be definitely proven. The thing that couldn't be proven is that she was a sexual mascot. So, Hengist said, well, I feel more comfortable, Martin, saying what is definitely can be proved here, but there's four or five women who says that Debbie was screwing their boyfriends and their husbands and the rest at the end of the Klan meeting. He said, well, I'll go with the stuff that can't definitely be proved. He said, we can't go ahead and say the names of these women. And I said, all right, I won't. Well, Hengist is dead. And essentially, one of the heifers who Fink caught out actually knew that Debbie was guilty as hell of that, and she was trying Pastor John Britton in 2007 for repeating what I said. But I told Debbie Downey, I said, "You're not no Klan Clayliff, you're the Klan Klunt," and that nickname stuck to her. She was known as Klunt Downey, and she still whines that she used to be dual seed line, but evil man. Mean, slanderous, gossiping men, Diablos, malicious gossipers, made her go no devil. Well, no. Meerkat Mark was no devil from the beginning. But these people don't believe, they don't believe. But anyway, Stormfront allows Meerkat Mark and Debbie Downey to go up to the tricks of banning and censoring people so that Christian Identity will not be liked here. And, Debbie Downey was really bad about that. Now, she got to where she banned some guy who gave $8,000 to Don Black, and Don Black liked to have had a fit. I mean, you banned somebody who gave me $8,000. I can get another $8,000. And I think Stormfront is pretty well a Zog False Front, just like VNNF here. Essentially, VNNF follows Stormfront by about a year. They used to have, when it was part of Pierce's thing, used to have pretty good articles written here, and then it got a V-Bulletin forum, and then it became nothing more than a Tard Corral. And that's what it is now. So I don't feel sorry for Don Black. I think that, essentially the little meerkat screwed things up, for a reason. Now Andy brings up, We've turned, Lisa into an adjective here. Russ, I'm pretty well discussing what's going on here. We have about 15, 20 minutes. I have about 2 hours to go ahead and discuss things. Anyway, I don't feel sorry about what's going on in the movement. In Detroit, pretty well, the niggers are running wild. International news, these Jew Mamzers have squeezed out another little Jew Mamzer, and he may become king or queen of England here, who knows. I want to go ahead and discuss a little bit of gossip. Andy was saying that in the Book of Judges, about every chapter has that in those days there was no king in Israel. And it goes ahead and goes on and says that every man did what was in his own sight. Now, last week, I read from Judges chapter 1, 2, and 3 before I went to chapter 17 and 18. We were talking about Uyghurs. It seems that Moses the lawgiver, his son Gershom had a son called Jonathan. And this Jonathan was a little rent-seeking Uyghur. He was looking for his fortune, and he served this thief who'd stolen from his mother 1,100 shekels, and 200 shekels of it was used to make a silver idol. So they were worshiping Yahweh in the form of a graven foundry image, a silver idol of about what? 200 ounces worth, solid silver idol that they were calling Yahweh. And it probably has a stupid little grin on its face, and who knows? Who knows what the little idol looked like? It probably looks stupid. pathetic even. And, you know, or it may have looked like Zeus. Who knows? It may have looked like the Baal of the day. So Moses' grandson was a total priestcraft wigger. He was looking for his fortune, so he serves Yahweh in these vestments, which are a parody of what the actual high priest wore. So Moses' grandson was a total wigger. And you read about how the men of Dan, they weren't able. Yeah, they weren't able to go ahead and whoop the crap out of these Amorites. The Amorites had them whooped so much that where their tribal inheritance was, that they lived on the hills and the Canaanites lived in the valleys. Whereas the Ephraimites and Judeans were even able to go ahead but put them under tribute. And you read by Judges chapter 2 what Yahweh's plan was. Yahweh's plan was not to have Joshua kill every single Canaanite. It was to allow these Canaanites to be thorns in the side of the Israelites. So by Judges chapter 3, we read about the first 198 years after the partial conquest of Canaan. The partial conquest of Canaan, you had for a period of years, for about 17 years, after Joshua's death, you had the elders, the men of Joshua's generation afterwards, and they, you know, pretty well they kept things in line. But for 8 years, you had the Mesopotamians. They were the sons of Aram. You know, they were the Arameans whose language Christ spoke of Aramaic. The Arameans of Mesopotamia, who were related, related in some way to the Israelites, they branched off, but they were white people. And Logan, I'm hearing feedback here. Okay.
I'm having a computer trouble.
Okay.
If you want to mute me,
I'll go ahead and mute you, Logan. Here. All right. Anyway, Troublemaker, he makes this point, what he said to Joshua. The answer is that I read last week in Judges chapter 2, let me go back to it, because we're going to have a bunch. Hey, Gary, do you want me to go ahead and mute you as well?
I don't care. Whatever you want to do is
alright. Alright, I'll go ahead and do that.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Have Gary listening in? Oh, darn. Well, TalkShoe is working better than it has for a while. I'm going to go ahead and try to minimize the feedback. Russ says it doesn't really matter, but, you know, let's see what Yahweh said. Let's see what Yahweh says. Okay? What did Yahweh say about this? About, you know, you had a period of 17 years in Judges chapter 1, which is the last book of Jasher. And it said, you will not make, you know, I will not break my covenant with you. Make no league of it. Well, anyway, he died. And all, it says in, you know, Judges chapter 2, verse 10, all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. There arose another generation after them, which knew not Yahweh, nor the works which he had done for Israel. Verse 11. And the children of Israel did evil in sight of Yahweh and served Balaam. Balaam was the name for, essentially these gods here, which were, you know, after the, you know, sort of like Zeus and Woden or Brahim for the Aryans. They were these Baal gods. They were the Baal gods of the groves. You know, usually Ishtar was the goddess of the grove. They were the gods of the high places, the mountains. Anyway, goes on and says that the children of Israel were all killed. That slave-born generation was killed. Their children and grandchildren conquered partially Canaan. You read in Judges chapter 1 and 2 that they didn't go ahead and make a full thing here. Well, anyway, in verse 13, they forsook Yahweh and served Baal and Asheroth. Verse 14, and the anger of Yahweh was hot against Israel, and he delivered them into the hands of spoilers that spoiled them, and he sold them into the hands of their enemies round about, so they could not any longer stand before their enemies. Verse 15, whithersoever they went out, the hand of Yahweh was against them for evil, as Yahweh had said, and as Yahweh had sworn unto them, and they were greatly distressed. Verse 16, nevertheless, Yahweh raised up judges, and the margins it says champions, which delivered them out of the hands of those that spoiled them. Verse 17, yet they would not hearken to their judges, but they went whoring after other gods, and bowed themselves unto them. They turned quickly out of the way which their fathers walked in, obeying the commandments of Yahweh. They did not so. Verse 18, when the Lord raised up judges, then Yahweh was with the judge and delivered them out of the hands of their enemies all the days of the judge. For it repented Yahweh because of their groanings by reason of them that oppressed them and vexed them. Verse 19, and came to pass when the judge was dead that they returned and corrupted themselves more than their fathers. Now, in the book of Exodus, he says these people have corrupted themselves. They worshipped other idols. And last week we read how one of them, the grandson of Moses, was serving a silver Baal and pretending it was Yahweh. They ceased not from their own doings nor from their stubborn way. Verse 20, and the anger of Yahweh was hot against Israel, and he said, because that this people has transgressed my covenant which I command their fathers, and have not hearkened to them. Verse 21, I also will not henceforth drive out any from before them of the nations which Joshua left when he died. So he's not, Yahweh says, I'm not going to help them kill these Canaanites. Now you read earlier that the Judahites had stormed and burnt Jerusalem, but the Jebusites snuck back in and re-put up the walls and lived there. And this occurred for about 400 some years. So that when David became king, one of his first acts was to sneak up through the sewer with his crafty nephew Joab and conquer and kill the Jebusites and destroy them and turn Jerusalem into his city, the city of David. Verse 22 of Judges chapter 2, that through them I may prove Israel whether they will keep the way of Yahweh to walk therein as their fathers did keep it or not. Verse 23, therefore Yahweh left those nations without driving them out hastily, neither delivered he them into the hand of Joshua. So essentially it seems like Yahweh knew that they would do this, and thus he left Joshua's work undone. Now in Judges chapter 3 I read the timeline, and I pretty well added the time in that the first judge was Othniel, the son of Kenaz. Othniel was both the nephew and the son-in-law of Caleb. So this was the generation after Caleb. It was and Caleb was the generation of Joshua. So pretty well Othniel had helped his father-in-law conquer and drive out not only the Canaanites, but they killed three Rephaim giants, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 foot, probably not 13 foot, probably more than 9 foot, probably 10 or 11 or 12 foot giants, killed three of them in Hebron. And he was the first judge. Now for 8 days, for 8 years, they were under the Arameans. It says the land had rest 40 years, and then he died. And then it said, again, they did evil. And so, here are the Ammonites and the Amalekites and the Moabites. And the children of Israel were under the Moabites for 18 years until he raised a left-handed Benjamite who was one heck of a knife artist who killed this fat king, Moabite king called Eglon. And it says then later, that the land had rest 80 years. So you add these periods of time up, you find out that after the conquest of Canaan, of the 400 some years under the Judges, in Judges chapter 3, we are covering, 198 years, more or less. Okay? I went on to talk about the addendums to the book of Judges. And in chapter 7, there was a man of Mount Ephraim. He was an Ephraimite. His name was Micah. He stole from his mother 1,100 shekels. He confessed to it. She said, "Oh, son, you're wonderful. Let's go ahead and make us an idol." So he went ahead and he found him a Baal priest. And that Baal priest was, more than likely, Moses' grandson, Jonathan. Meanwhile, the Danites, who hadn't conquered much of anything, were looking for some easy conquest. So they decided they were doing a scouting trip, and they massacred a village of Canaanites. They were Sidonians. They were not hard, mean Canaanites like the sons of Heth, a.k.a. the Hittites, with their iron weapons. They were not the blonde, blue-eyed, Leslie Stahl-type Jews, Amorites. They were the first sons, who were the Sidonians, who Finkelstein claims are, Israelites. They were retail Jews. I can get it for you, wholesale Jews. And they weren't even sea Jews. They were inside there. So the Danites went and massacred this village of, these massacred of lax, it said, lackadaisical Canaanites. And this was, they were from Sidon. It was a town of Sidon that they were supposed to conquer and kill and drive out around the coast of Lebanon. But, so as a result, they renamed that land, which was not what they were given, but what they took. And so, Israel was, well, it was said that along the west bank of Jordan, that Israel stretched from Dan to Beersheba. So, 17 and 18 are about that. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and go on to, the reason I've gone ahead and skipped to 17, 18, 19, the very last books, the addendum, they call it an appendix, is that this occurred, more than likely, within 50 years of the conquest of Canaan. That's why I'm covering it, okay? Well, Joshua did follow Yahweh. It seems like Yahweh pretty well said he was going to allow this idolatry to test Israel. Okay, let me unmute guest 7. All right, let me mute Logan Hunter and Gary, because we're getting right into the meat of tonight's discussion. Gary, Logan, you on?
Yeah, right here.
Okay, anyway, I pretty well covered whatever little current events and whatever bowel movement gossip there was. Essentially, I'm going right now, starting with Judges chapter 19, with the Israelite-Benjamite Civil War. And, how, essentially, the last books of the book of Judges, you have about 400 years, maybe a little bit more, between 400 and 500 years between the conquest of Canaan. And the reason I'm covering the last books is that this occurred within 50 years. The first one covers where Moses' own grandson was a little Baal priest. A little critter who was pretending to be, acting like a Levite to a silver idol, by a thief who stole from his mother, and then being, their head Baal priest for the tribe of Dan, who, I mean, this is just Whiggers within 50 years. So essentially, I'll go back on the next program from Judges and the rest here. The reason we're covering is that we covered essentially the history from the creation to the conquest of Canaan, or the partial conquest of Canaan. I want to cover the history of the Israelites, so that you know, for understanding dual seed line Christianity. I think it is interesting, and in many cases, the days of the judges was sort of like the Wild Wild West. There was no overall civil authority. There was judges and champions, but in many cases, what they would do is that you'd usually have a people, they'd let, you know, during their father's time, during their children's time, they would obey Yahweh. When the judge was there to keep them on the straight and narrow, you know, like when Othniel ruled, had peace for 40 years. After Ehud had killed these Moabites, they had peace for 80 years. But sooner or later, usually you'd have a generation who thought that they were big and bad, who thought that they deserved everything. Success made them soft-headed. Folks, I mean, Whiggers, you know, we're reading about what happened, let's see, 1400 or so B.C., and we're talking about what happened 3,400 years ago. And, folks, Whiggers have not changed. They have not changed in 6,000 years. You know, Adam was somewhat of a Whigger. Ham was a big Whigger. Esau was a big Whigger. And you're hearing the story about Whiggers. You know, stupid white niggers who are white, who are Israelite, who are Yahweh's chosen seed. You know, sometimes he said he chose the foolish of the world. He chose the weak and base things that no flesh should glory. Sons of God, you are called not because of greatness. Let those who glory boast in Christ, not in their own, not in their own filthy rag righteousness. You know, I'm quoting a psalm, which was a hymn that Dwight Armstrong made here, and I used to sing it quite a bit here. So, you know, sons of God, you are called, but not because of your greatness. And these people became Whiggers. They became stupid. And folks, that's what I keep on trying to say in my ministry. We have a Whigger problem. We have Whiggers running around acting like a bunch of ass clowns, thinking they're smart, thinking they're wonderful, and not obeying Yahweh's law, not worshiping Yahweh, worshiping themselves. And in the case of Micah and Moses' grandson, you know, the Whigger Jonathan, you know, here's this character. He knows what he's not supposed to do. He's not supposed to be worshiping. You know, do you think Grandpa didn't do it that way? Grandpa got a little bit annoyed at a golden calf. Do you think he would have liked the silver one any better? But here is Moses' grandson being a little Levite Whigger Baal priest, serving a Baal as representing Yahweh. Just like we read in the book of Jasher, where Abraham's own father not only served Nimrod, not only did Nimrod's evil bidding, but he was an idol maker. And remember when we read that Abraham, he goes ahead and he sees these worthless idols, they just sit there, they can't eat, they can't drink, they can't shit, they can't do nothing. And so what he does, he goes ahead and he takes a hammer, he smashes the crap out, you know, he has 12 idols, he smashes the crap out of 11 of them. And then when his dad comes home, he said, "Who did this?" He points to the biggest one, you know, of the 12. He said, "He did it. He did it." You don't think Terah, you know, figured out, you know, that no, this big idol didn't do it. You know, he figured out his son had done it, didn't he? And he thinked out his son. He went ahead and told Nimrod that he'd gone ahead and fooled Nimrod, and his son was alive, and Nimrod was mad, and he threw both Abraham and his older brother Nahor into the fire, just like Babylonians like doing. And guess what? Nahor was a little Whigger who sat on the edge, and Nahor got burned to a crisp, didn't he? Right? Remember, Logan? We covered this?
Yeah.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is that Whiggers do not change. They're still ass clowns. They're still idiots. And we're reading about some idiots and essentially how they let Jews run wild, and as a result, Jews screwed shit up, and the Uyghurs had to pay for it. Does that sound familiar? Does it sound familiar when you let Jews run wild, let Jews escape punishment for their evil deeds, and Uyghurs end up having to pay for it? I mean, you know, this sort of thing could have occurred today, right? That I'm reading about, which happened 3,400 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gary, what do you...
The thing is, Martin, is that, you know, I think that if you're an Israelite and you didn't grow up, or if you, like, say, me and Gary, or you, if you didn't, I know, like, me and Gary did not grow up knowing identity, and, you know, I basically started going to the Judeo-Christian churches.
Searching.
If you don't grow up knowing Yahweh's laws and knowing that you're an Israelite and knowing the truth, then you are kind of, I wouldn't say you're a proselyte in the sense that you're willfully leaving your inheritance, but you have grown up breaking Yahweh's laws and you're a sinner. So it takes a conscious effort to come back to Yahweh, or to realize that you're Israelite and to come into the keeping of Yahweh's laws. As far as, you know, if you want to say Uyghur, I mean, I guess there's different classifications, but a proselyte is somebody that leaves their Israelite heritage, they leave their birthright, they leave Yahweh, and they leave his truth and his laws, and they break his laws for whatever reason. If they want to kiss up to Satan and his kids, or if they want money or power, or for whatever reason. But just to call, you know, I think there's different classifications of white people or Israelite people that you're calling Uyghurs.
Maybe, but. Generally,
you yourself admitted when you were younger you were a Uyghur.
Oh yeah, you go to the Uyghur. You go to the Uyghur factory. That's why I call the pubic school system. You go to the Uyghur factory, and generally there's something in you that knows that this crap ain't right. This crap. This is stupid. This is idiocy. And most cases, I get very, very good grades, and I'd be called Einstein by the other ones. In some cases, I'd read the textbook, and sometimes I knew more than the teacher would. And sometimes some would get pretty well mad. Well, who's the teacher here? Well, I guess I ought to be, really. But, you know, judge y'all, you know. The thing is that you, in many cases, you have to break through programming. You got to break through indoctrination, and it is far worse now than when I went to college. I mean, I was a pre-engineering student. At least they used to teach you what was called the scientific method. You didn't. You might go ahead and bring up a hypothesis, but essentially if you went ahead and studied it and essentially the results said your hypothesis was crap, you would abandon that hypothesis. Nowadays, you have Jew science to where, hey, we already know what we want to find out, and we will twist the facts, we will twist the law to get a certain result. And the end result is, well, Detroit, or the District of Corruption, or actually your county seat, anywhere you go. We have a Uyghur problem. I am far more inclined to blame the Uyghurs than I am inclined to blame, you know, the niggers or the beaners, because essentially they're just animals. You go look at Detroit. I mean, if there wasn't for food stamps, and there was a bunch of bitching last week to where essentially the House Republicans cut the food stamp program from the Department of Agriculture program. There was a bunch of pissing and moaning about that. And essentially, you know, they... mostly the Department of Agriculture is for these big Jew-run corporate, you know, they say it's for the family farmer, it's not. And in many cases, now it's for the Jew, you know, the Jew corporation, corporate farmer, and it's for essentially make sure the niggers and meaners and wiggers have food stamps. That's part of the Department of Agriculture. And there was a bunch of bitching and pissing and moaning a week or so ago. Well, essentially the Republican House cut off, you know, went ahead and passed their farm bill, but they cut off billions of dollars for the food stamp program. And there was a lot of pissing and moaning about that. I don't know if you remember that or not. And
I worked at, I mean, since Jerry lives not too far from Detroit, he used to live and work in Detroit. I forget exactly when he moved out of there, I mean, 20 years ago. Whatever. Why don't you ask Jerry, I mean, I just read a real long article, I'll email it to you, but I just read a real long article about Frosty Woolridge, you know, I'm that guy that rode all over the world on his bicycle, the third world countries.
Yeah.
And he worked in Detroit from 1975 to 1990. For 15 years, he worked in a moving truck. So like U-Haul or some of these moving companies, and he drove a moving truck. And he said in that 15-year period, of course, that was after the riots of 67 or whatever, but in that 15-year period of 75 to 90, he moved all kind of white people out of Detroit. And he said that basically, Detroit had become a third world status, not so much yet 100% on the black people there. He was blaming a lot of it on the Muslims. And I know people in our identity want to praise the Muslims, how great they are. The Muslims, they're all brown-skinned Mongols, so you can say they're sand, you know, they used to call them sand niggers or whatever. They're part black, part Asian, part whatever. They're brown-skinned. But the Muslim religion is satanic. And basically, you know, they're bringing over 300,000 of the, over one-third of the, of the residents of Detroit now are Muslims.
Okay.
And so basically you've got this ignorance, you've got this Sharia law, you've got these, I hear all this crap among these white people with identity saying that the two Boston bombers were set up, it wasn't them, it was, well, you know what, all Muslims are prone to violence and ignorance and stupidity.
Well, maybe it was them, maybe it wasn't. I mean, you know that whatever happened, you're not going to know the truth of the matter. I mean, the government's going to lie to you.
Basically, I've only been to Detroit Airport a couple of times and drove to the city. Ask Gary, basically, if it's just the blacks, if it's the Muslims, ask him exactly when Detroit went to shit in his opinion. Ask Gary,
because
he knows a lot more about Detroit than me.
I hear it went to shit after 1967. But, alright, Gary, you have an opinion about when did Detroit turn to crap?
Well, they had a race riot in the 40s there, too. It started back at that time, I think it was. There's always that dissent. I don't matter what city they're in or where they're at, and I think a lot of it forms from jealousy. There's jealousy of the Israelites, and we take no credit for that. Nadivahi chose us to be Israelites, and he gave us abilities to build and do things and be a blessing to the nations around the world. So it really got going when they had a big newspaper article, and they said this: if you blacks will not turn in your fellow black criminal and you won't testify against them, it won't be long, there'll be no whites, or your black criminals to steal from, and then they'll be coming and stealing from you. And they, even right now, in these different cases in Flint and Detroit, they can't get the people to testify, even though it's black killing black now, they can't get the people to testify or stand up to it. And I don't know exactly what the reason of that is. I suspect of all the thing going on, if they catch squealing, they kill you. It's kind of a mob type of thinking.
Well, the end result is that, hey, I mean, see, niggers have a hell of a time. See, what are they going to do? I mean, are they going to say the reason we're screwed up is because we're stupid niggers? And they can't, you know, they can't, and they won't do that. So essentially, it's the white man who's keeping them down. And the answer is no. If it wasn't for white people, they would make a big deal about the Lost Boys of Sudan. And pretty much when niggers are by themselves, they just screw crap up. That's just what niggers do. They're not too smart. So, that's just, you know, so knowing that they're so, stupid and so inept, it's not them who's really causing the problem. It was up to us. I mean, you know, pretty well they'd still, you know, if they were even here, they would be in their own segregated place here. As far as the Beaners are concerned, really, they belong in their own country. They don't belong in this country. And so, you know, and then because we believe what we believe, that Jews are the literal spawn of Satan, who do you blame for the way things are? And I blame Uyghurs. You guys have called them proselytes. I call them Uyghurs. Okay? But they are what they are, and they don't, you know, we are in the mess we are because this, you know, Uyghurs have gone ahead and allowed this. In the book of Judges, you have, you know, what I'm trying to point is that you would have, for 400 some years, you would have these people who would become worse than their fathers would. And Yahweh would repent, it would repent of, you know, they'd suffer. They would suffer the first time for 8 years, the second time for 18 years. And their oppressors are becoming worse and worse and worse of an oppressor. And, you know, they're being oppressed by, you know, by Canaanites near and far. They're being oppressed by Arameans, who are a sort of kindred people. Then they're being oppressed by Moabites, who are essentially did not like the Israelites at all, who were sort of mean to them and turned them as slaves. And you had what, about 198 years in chapter 3, which was outlined. So you'll have various judges here. The Philistines were not Canaanites, but they too were badly treated. And you read in Judges chapter 2, to where the Judeans rose up and took 3 out of 5 of the major Philistine cities. You read where they rose up and they set fire. They besieged and set fire to Jerusalem, which was called Jebus, you know, where the Jebusites were. And they allowed these Jebusites to come back into the rubble and re-raise this rubble and re-fortify their cities. To where, what, you know, close to 500 years later, you know, 400 some years later, here is, you know, 400 or 500 years later, here David takes Jerusalem from the Canaanites for the last time, okay, and makes it into, you know, his city. And you read that, you know, pretty well Yahweh figured out that would happen. So you would have generational things. You would have during the time of the fathers who had suffered and begged and said, please, we have sinned, we have done wrong, now it's time for prayer and repentance. And you hear that, you see that in American history all the time. And then they would rise up a champion, and during their lifetimes and during their sons' lifetimes, they would behave themselves. But then during their grandchildren, who did not know, you know, did not know the events, during their grandchildren and great-grandchildren, you read about 80 years of peace after Ehud had killed Eglon the Moabite. 80 years, you're talking of what, 3 generations more or less, right? And then they go back to their same old trouble here. Anyway, what I'm covering is the tail end of the Book of Judges about things that which had already occurred within probably 50 years of the partial conquest of Canaan under Joshua, when they've been all set to take what they're supposed to, you know, take. And you have Judges chapter 1, which covered the last book of Jasher, then Judges chapter 2, which tells the overview of the book, then Judges chapter 3, what happened within the first 198 years. So then I'm jumping back to Judges 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21, you know, to the Benjamite Civil War. And pretty well that's what I'm going to cover tonight. Okay? But I think the problem is Uyghurs. I think in many cases that Uyghurs, in many cases, want to die. Uyghurs are rebellious. Uyghurs are stupid. Uyghurs do stupid crap, and so they suffer for what they do. And in many cases, I have a family. You know, I have a brother who has helped kill my father and probably did kill my mother. You know, three out of three of my nephews are Uyghurs. Some are pretty bad. You have a bunch of people who are stupid and greedy and short-sighted and none too righteous. And even Moses' grandson was a Uyghur. You know, this little Levite priest who's serving a silver idol representing, I guess, Yahweh. That's the sort of Uyghurish thing to do, ain't it? Right?
That's true.
Anyway, so shall we go ahead and go on and start reading the three chapters I want to cover tonight? And I'll try to get done around 11 o'clock. Okay? Or before. All right? Sound good?
That's good. Go ahead. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and... I don't hear too much background.
Hey, if you want to mute me, you can mute me, and then you can unmute me if you want me to talk about something.
All right, I'm going to go ahead. I don't hear any, if I hear any feedback, I'll go ahead and mute. If I don't hear any feedback, I'll just continue. All right?
Well, just go ahead and mute me. Go ahead and mute me anyway, because I might be some tea or something. Just go ahead and mute me.
All right, Logan, if you want. All right, if I hear any feedback, I'll go ahead and mute Gary. All right, Judges chapter 19, the Levite and his concubine. Verse 1, and it came to pass in those days, when there was no king in Israel, that there was a certain Levite sojourning on the side of Mount Ephraim, you know, the hill country of Ephraim, who took to him a concubine out of Bethlehem, Judah. So this was Bethlehem, which belonged to Judah. So he was a Levite who took a concubine, a girlfriend, whatever, out of Bethlehem, Judah. Verse 2, and his concubine played the whore against him and went away from him unto her father's house to Bethlehem, Judah, and was there 4 whole months. So, let's see, it says a year and 4 months, but oh well. Verse 3, and her husband arose and went after her to speak friendly unto her, to speak kindly to her, and to bring her again, having a servant with him and a couple of asses, and she brought him unto her father's house, and when the father of the damsel saw him, he rejoiced to meet him. So you're already having a breakdown of tribal boundaries. You have a Levite who has a girlfriend whose father comes from Bethlehem, Judah, which means that essentially probably his girlfriend is a Judean and he's a Levite. But he lives, he serves the tribe of Ephraim. The two major tribes was Ephraim and Judah. And between them they had the small tribe of Benjamin. You got to go ahead and understand what happened. Well, you had the small tribe of Benjamin, which was in between Ephraim and Judah. And essentially, both Judah and Ephraim were the two major tribes, the two most powerful tribes. Manasseh had the most land, it was sort of like the Texans, but Ephraim was the head of the house of Joseph. Benjamin was the brother of Joseph. And when they were in the wilderness, Ephraim, Manasseh, and Joseph were all on the same, were the three tribes, I think, that were of the east or south or whatever here. They had the standard. So, verse 4. And his father-in-law, the damsel's father, retained him, and he abode with them 3 days, so they did eat and drink and lodged there. Verse 5. And it came to pass on the fourth day, when they rose early in the morning, they rose up to depart. And the damsel's father said unto his son-in-law, comfort your heart with a morsel of bread, and afterwards go your way. Verse 6. And they sat down and did eat and drink, both of them together. For the damsel's father had said unto the man, be content, I pray thee, and tarry all night. Let your heart be merry. So essentially the father-in-law of his girlfriend, who's been sort of screwing around, and, you know, she ran off, and Levi, you know, was taking a servant, taking some, you know, probably three asses, you know, taking some stuff, and essentially they stay for 3 days, and then the fourth day they're going to leave, and they don't leave. Verse 7. And when the man rose up to depart, his father-in-law urged him, therefore he lodged there again. So they stayed 4 days. They meant to leave on the fourth day, but they didn't get out of the yard. Verse 8. And he arose early on the morning of the fifth day to depart, and the damsel's father said, comfort your heart, I pray you. And they tarried until the afternoon. And they did eat both of them. So, hey, he's gone ahead and left. This is day 5. As in the afternoon, they still haven't left for home. Verse 9. And when the man rose up to the bar, he and his concubine and his servant, his father-in-law, the damsel's father, said unto him, behold, now the day draws toward evening. I pray you tarry all night. Behold, the day grows to an end. Lodge here, your heart may be merry, and tomorrow get you early on your way, then you may go home. So essentially, I guess the father of the girl, you know, probably knows is that, hey, she's going to be a couple days' journey in Ephraim. And here he is, you know, in Judah. Have to go through Benjamin to get to Ephraim. And, heck, you know, I mean, if you went, what, 20, 30 miles, why, you know, it wasn't like getting in the car and hopping over to Neosho or, or going to Detroit. I don't know why one would. But anyway, it's not like just hopping in the car. I mean, these burros didn't go very fast here. A military formation can supposedly go 4 miles an hour. Now, when I speed marched in Nijmegen, we did, 25 miles in about, 5 hours or so? So we did, about 5 miles an hour. This was pretty well a quick pace here. And by this time we had got to where we got pretty good. But usually a man in good shape can do 4 miles an hour. So if they were 20 miles away, it would take at least a day or two. And so the father-in-law just said, hey, you know, he keeps on delaying there here. And here it is, day 5. He's asking him to go ahead and stay. Well, Levite, you know, verse 10. But the man, the Levite, would not tarry that night, and he rose up and departed, and came over against Jebus, which is Jerusalem. And there were with him 2 asses saddled. His concubine also was with him. So he took, you know, well, 2 asses there saddled. They may have had a third, which, you know, had a pack. Who knows? But anyway, verse 11. And when they were by Jebus, the day was far spent. And the servant said to his master, come, I pray you, and let us turn into the city of the Jebusites and lodge in it. Well, in Joshua chapter 2, or 1, or I'm sorry, Judges 1 or 2, the Judeans had already rose up against the Jebusites, and they'd burned down Jerusalem. And I guess the Canaanites had come in and snuck in and fixed it up and were allowed to do so. So let's go ahead and spend night with these Jebusites. Verse 12, his master said unto him, we will not turn aside hither into the city of a stranger that is not of the children of Israel. We will pass over to Gibeah. Well, folks, remember Gibeah? That was the home of the Gibeonites. These Amorites, these blonde, blue-eyed, not-so-big-nosed Jews who had fooled Joshua, had fooled the princes of Israel, who were still to be a slave people, who were still to hew that wood and draw that water. These were Jews who were supposed to be put to work. We're going to go ahead and pass over there. Heck, we're going to go ahead and see the Motel 6 here. Why, heck. You know, maybe they'll have lodging here, you know, when they're not busy hewing wood and drawing water. Verse 13, he said to the servant, come and let's draw near into one of those places to lodge all night in Gibeah or Ramah. So Gibeah was a major town. Ramah was probably a suburb or a smaller outlying town. Verse 14, they passed on and went their way, and the sun went down upon them when they were by Gibeah, which belonged to Benjamin. Okay, folks, remember, here's Ephraim, Mount Ephraim, the hill country of Ephraim. There's the hill country. This is in the center of the West Bank. Now, they'd already, you know, the Judeans had already, you know, dealt with, you know, here's Bethlehem, Judah, where Christ would be born later on, what, 1,500 years later. Probably 1,400 some years later. But they don't go there. They've left there. So they're going through the small little piece of Benjamin. You know, the little state of Benjamin. So like South Carolina, on your way to Virginia here from North Carolina. Let's say you end up having 13 colonies. Essentially, Ephraim's sort of like Virginia, and, you know, Judah's sort of like North Carolina, and you're passing through South Carolina or whatever. Now, I know this is not very good geography, but Benjamin had a small tribal allotment. It was not a big tribe. It was between Judah and Ephraim. So here they are at Gibeah. Verse 15, the sun's gone down. Verse 15, turned aside thither to go in to lodge in Gibeah. And when he went in, he sat him down in the street of the city, for there was no man that took them into his house to lodging. Folks, it's sort of like in Sodom and Gomorrah, it was understood that you were supposed to be hospitable to a stranger. And one of the sins of Sodom, you know, other than sodomy, homosexual sodomy, was like what happened in Gomorrah with Lot's daughter and Abraham's servant, to where they were running a crooked court system. Yahweh didn't much care for that either. So anyway, there was supposed to be people who took them in. They didn't have a Motel 6 at this time here. But on the other hand, the Levites sort of thought, well, maybe I can go ahead and buy lodging. Verse 16, and behold, there came an old man from his work out of the field even. So essentially, here it is. It's twilight. He's come, he lives in the town of Gibeah. He has his inheritance, his field, and he's working out there, and he comes in there by the evening, which was also of Mount Ephraim. So he's an Ephraimite. And he sojourned in Gibeah. But the men of the place were Benjamites. Well, also Gibeonites in Gibeah, which stands to reason. Jews. Verse 17, when he lifted up his eye, he saw a wayfaring man in the street of the city, and the old man said, where goes you? And whence comes you? So where'd you go? Where are you going and where'd you come from? Verse 18, said to him, we are passing from Bethlehem, Judah, to the side of Mount Ephraim. From thence am I. And I went down to Bethlehem, Judah, but now am going to the house of Yahweh. There is no man that receives me to house. So there's no man that will, bring me into his house. Verse 19. Yet there is both straw and provender for our asses. I got the hay, I got the grain, and there is bread and wine also for me and for my handmaid, and for the young man which is with your servants. There is no want of anything. Verse 20, and the old man said, peace be with you. Howsoever, let all your wants lie upon me. fully lodged not in the street. Verse 21. So he brought him into his house and gave provender into his asses. They washed their feet and did eat and drink. Verse 22. So essentially, here's Ephraimite, who is living among the Benjamites. Somehow he's doing some farm work. He's, he's an old man. He's somehow in there, and he sees people from his neck of the woods here, who used to be from his neck of the woods, an Ephraimite. Verse 22. Now, as they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial. Now, sons of Belial meant, essentially worthless people. It meant wigger trash. It meant Jews, because sons of Belial, Belial was a demon. So essentially, sons of Belial meant about the same thing as sons of bitches. Essentially, it like these worthless sons of bitches. Essentially, sons of Belial were worthless people. Trash, vermin, Jews. there were Jews among them. We already know that because this is Gibeah here. Some of these worthless people have sort of gotten off of, working like Jews ought to work here, hewing wood and drawing water. Certain sons of Belial beset the house around about, and be at the door, spoke to the master of the house, the old man, saying, bring forth the man that came into thy house, that we may know him. Good Lord, you sort of think that some of these critters from Sodom and Gomorrah had moved in there. Maybe they did. Maybe they were the sons of, the Sodomites. Who knows? So, pretty much the same thing that happened at Sodom and, and Gomorrah was happening here among the Gibeonites, among these Benjamites. They want to go ahead and have something strange that they shouldn't be having. Verse 23, and the man, the master of the house, went out to them and said, no, my brethren, no, I pray you, do not so wickedly, seeing that this man has come into mine house, do not this folly. Or, it's a scandalous thing. Now he's going to go ahead and do the same thing that Lot said here. Verse 24, behold, here is my daughter, a maiden, and his concubine. Them will I bring out now, and humble you them, and do with them what seems good to you. But to this man, do not so vile a thing. Well, I don't know. I guess they had never heard of women's liberation back then. This is not a manly thing to do here, but I guess, there were some unmanly critters around there, and I don't know what the heck these idiots used to do here, but anyway, he's going ahead and offer him his daughter and the concubine. Verse 25, but the men would not hearken to him, so the man took his concubine and brought her forth unto them, and they knew her. So they were raping the crap out of her and abused her all the night until the morning. And when the day began to spring, they let her go. So he decided not to, the old guy of the house decided not to give his daughter, his maiden daughter, and they probably didn't want her, but, here was something strange they didn't know. So he throws his girlfriend out. Yeah. Hey, Gary. You okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So, here they are. They're raping and they're abusing and they're just doing all sorts of bad things to this girlfriend of the Levites. Verse 26. Then came the woman in the dawning of the day and fell down at the door of the man's house where her lord was till it was light. So, she managed to... They finally get done doing whatever they're doing with her. She managed to crawl her way to the threshold of the light. Verse 27, her lord rose in the morning and opened the doors of the house and went out to go his way. And behold, the woman, his concubine, was fallen down at the door of the house, and her hands were upon the threshold. Verse 28, he said to her, up, let's be going. Well, very nice. But none answered. Well, then the man took her up upon an ass, and the man rose up and got him to his place. So he loads up her body. I guess she's crawled there to the door, her hands upon the threshold. I mean, heck, maybe she should have now, you know, she should have run off from him because he did not seem like a rather gallant man. You know what I mean? He goes, oh, let's go ahead and get up. You've had enough rest. You've had enough fun for the night. But then again, she did play the harlot here, so maybe he just sort of thought is that, hey, this was what we pay for the nice lodging, and he didn't really care. But essentially, he loads her up, probably slings her up, just like in these old Wild Wild West. See, this is sort of like the Wild Wild West, but with Jews, with Canaanites. With, you know, Jews and Moabites and Sons of Belial. Well, he had Sons of Belial in the old, old West, and, but I don't know if he had as many Jews or Canaanites back then, but, you know, here it is. She slings, you know, slings her body over one of the mules, and he goes ahead and gets her up. She's deader than a doornail. Verse 29, and when he was come up to his house, he took a knife and laid hold on his concubine and divided her. So she more than likely was quite dead by then, together with her bones into 12 pieces, and sent her into all the coasts of Israel. Verse 30, and it was so that all that saw it said, there was no such deed done or seen from the day the children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt until this day. Consider of it, take advice, and speak your minds. Well, heck, they didn't have an internet in this day, but pretty well, I guess they got wet and dripping pieces of her, a bit and a piece. Yeah, so to say, it's sort of like Brokeback Mountain here. Well, let's not talk about Derek Black. Anyway, so here it was. It sets the stage for what is for what's happening, and this is within. This is within. There were probably some people who were born who ate the manna. You know, maybe even some who are still alive who were in slavery or born to slavery in Egypt. And they say, this is not right. So every man speaks his mind. Okay? Anyway, I'll go ahead and unmute. Alright. Logan, you're unmuted. What do you think of Judges chapter 19?
Yeah, I've read that story before. Basically, not all those men, those homosexual men that raped and killed that concubine woman, not all of them were mixed multitudes. They were some white Benjamites, evidently.
There were some Benjamites, but there were also more than likely some Gibeonites who had, as you read, they had been taken into slavery. They were to be slaves forever.
What I'm saying is that white people are capable of evil acts sometimes. I mean, it's pretty sickening to know that not only the homosexuality part, but also that, I mean, because in Sodom and Gomorrah, remember they had those homosexual men, but they harm women. But these individuals, they actually raped and killed this woman. I mean, and basically, this is not good white Israelite behavior. Okay, this
well,
is not
it was. Behavior. It was mixed here. You had these Gibeonites. They were these Amorites who had fooled Joshua and the elders. And they hadn't asked Yahweh what they should do. They just went ahead and cut a deal. Oh, we're going to obey the law of Moses here. If we go from far away to a place where we besiege it, a city of white men, and they give up. What happens? We let them live, and they be our slaves for three generations, and we can go ahead and intermarry with them. And pretty well, that was the law of Moses. Moses was dead. He died a couple months, you know, before they crossed over Jordan. So, in any case here, Moses probably would have asked. Joshua didn't think to ask. And Eleazar didn't think of saying, well, maybe you ought to ask Yahweh what to do. And essentially, they cut a deal, and then they were stuck. So it was a mixed city here of Jews, of Amorite Jews, who had somehow gotten out, of essentially working. They were supposed to be slaves forever. They were supposed to be hewers of wood and drawers of water, and essentially they were supposed to be the slaves because they were allowed to live. And here are, you know, here's probably, you know, pretty well within, you know, 50 years of the conquest of Canaan, some of these Jews have gotten into positions of power to where they can pull this crap, and there are Benjamites who allow this and probably took part in it too. So essentially, it's sort of like today. You had Uyghurs and Jews essentially doing evil crap that they were supposed to do.
What I was going to say is you got Jews and proselytes, and a lot of times, you know, I know myself, I've seen white trash or proselytes, they get drunk, they get on drugs, and they do a lot of evil stuff when they're drinking and drunk.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they are completely innocent. Oh, well, I was drunk, I didn't, you know, I couldn't help myself. No, it's just, a lot of times the alcohol and the drugs will lower their
inhibitions. They'll lower their inhibitions. Yeah. And essentially they'll do the evil stuff they want to do, and then they'll blame the liquor or the drugs for doing the evil stuff they do.
Yeah.
And essentially it is no excuse to do evil deeds just because you're drunk. I mean, if you get drunk and you're going to do evil deeds, then you maybe better not get drunk here. You know what I mean? You're responsible for the evil deeds you do. And in Judges chapter 20, you find out that a normal, essentially, if the Benjamites had their chance to give up, the murderers and the rapists. You know what I mean? They had their chance to give them up. They didn't give them up. So this tells me that these, you know, Amorite, Gibeonite Jews, they probably were the ones who initiated, who thought of that, because we've seen that, you know, usually the mixed multitude would start the crap, and then the Uyghurs would go ahead and join on in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right? And then Yahweh, during the 40 years, pretty well killed all the Uyghurs of a certain generation, except for Joshua and Caleb. And then the rest, you know, he pretty well got rid of the mixed multitude. So here we have a new mixed multitude in the city of Gibeah, where the Benjamites are allowing this sort of thing to happen. And I'm going to go ahead and cover what Saul did at the end if we end up having time here. But, you know, pretty well the reason I want to go to the book of Judges is that we have sort of like the Wild Wild West, but instead of Indians, we have cowboys and Jew boys. You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah.
Right? Cowboys and Jew boys. You know what I mean? And it ended up worse than cowboys and Indians. Alright? The Indians were a little bit better than the Jew boys. Alright. Judges chapter 20. Then all the children of Israel went out, and the congregation was gathered together as one man from Dan. It says the whole country, from Dan even unto Beersheba. So, in the previous two chapters ago, we found out how the Danites had been given inheritance, but they ambushed the small town of Sidonian Phoenician Canaanites, Finkelsheanites, and called it after Dan. So, the northernmost tribe now, instead of being Asher or Naphtali, was Dan. And the southern tribe was Simeon in Beersheba. And pretty well, I guess the whole land from one place to the other was around 120 or so miles long. With the land of Gilead, you have not only the west bank, but you have the east bank. The land of Gilead was the half-tribe of Manasseh. You know, sort of like the Texans. you know, the Gadites and the Reubenites. So Gilead was the east bank of the Jordan. So you have from Dan to Beersheba with the land of Gilead unto the Lord, unto Yahweh in Mizpah. So from my gather, that's where the tabernacle was. Verse 2. And the chief of all the people, even of all the tribes of Israel, presented themselves in the assembly of the people of Yahweh, 400,000 footmen that drew the sword. Verse 3. Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel had gone up to Mizpah. Then said the children of Israel, tell us, how was this wickedness? So, you know, and essentially the tribes say, you know, how did this happen? Verse 4. And the Levite, the husband of the woman that was slain, answered and said, I come into Gibeah that belongeth to Benjamin. I and my concubine to lodge. Well, Gibeah says it says it belongs to Benjamin. Essentially, it doesn't say it is Benjamin. It says it belongs to Benjamin. This was a tribe of these Amorites that belongs to Benjamin. Now, here was their chance that they wanted. They could have exterminated the Gibeonites for the rape if they had wanted to. Verse 5, and the men of Gibeah rose against me and beset me, you know, beset the house round about me by night, and thought to have slain me, and my concubine they forced, or in other words, they raped or humbled. They forced that she is dead. Verse 6, and I took my concubine and cut her in pieces and sent her throughout all the country of the inheritance of Israel, for they have committed lewdness and folly in Israel. Verse 7, behold, you are all children of Israel, give here your advice and counsel. So, you would have thought, if the Benjamites would have been smart, they could have said, okay, here are these Benjamites in Gibeah who did not do this evil thing. Here's our chance, because the Gibeonites have, you know, carried forth a rape, have carried forth a murder of an Israelite woman. This was their chance to destroy these Gibeonites, right? The children of Benjamin could have said, hey, look, we'll give up these damn Gibeonites. We don't really like them much anyway. They, you know, they're Jews. They sort of slack off on the hewing of wood and the drawing of water. Here was their chance. Here was the Benjamites' chance to get rid of these Jews, these Amorite Jews, right?
Hey, Mark.
Yeah.
How come this Levi was so willing to offer up his concubine and not fight for? I mean,
because he was a worthless wigger pussy.
I'm saying, he should have stood up and fought.
Well, he probably should have. Yeah, he should have. I mean, yeah, that's why he did. I think it's because he was a worthless wigger pussy. Okay?
That's what I get.
Yeah, well, that's what I think he was. You know, you asked. I mean, it doesn't say, boy, the Levite was a worthless, cowardly, wigger pussy, but you get the, at least that's the impression I got, you know, from him. Okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, the point I'm trying to make is that here was the Benjamites' chance, because it said Gibeah, that belongs to Benjamin. Here was Benjamin's chance to get rid of these slave Jews. Here was his chance to go ahead. They could have told these Gibeonites is that, hey, you had the wonderful idea of raping this woman and of doing homosexual rape. You had this wonderful idea, and you know, some of these Benjamites got to pay with their lives for it too, but here's their chance to go ahead and get rid, purge the evil out from among you. And in Deuteronomy several times it said, you will put evil out from among you, you will kill these people who do this evil. Here was their chance to get rid of these Jews who probably had plenty of time to go ahead and, you know, look after strange flesh here. They, you know, they didn't have their mind on grass, but on ass. And essentially, here's the chance, the Benjamites' chance to get rid of these Gibeonites. And they didn't, did they? Verse 8. And all the people arose. You know, they've asked their advice and counsel. And all the people rose as one man, saying, we will not any of us go to his tent, neither will any of us turn to his house. Verse 9, but now this shall be the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up by lot against it. And essentially it said, they said is that we're going to go ahead and pick a select militia. We're going to pick a select force. We're going to go up. And we are going against, Gibeah. Verse 10, we will take 10 men of 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel, and 100 of 1,000. And 1,000 out of 10,000 to fetch victual for the people they may do when they come to Gibeah, according to all the folly they have wrought in Israel. So what they're going to do is they're going to choose by lot. They're going to take 10%. They're going to go ahead and take 10% of their forces, and they're going to set up a commissariat. All right? Verse 11, so all the men of Israel were gathered against the city, knit together as one man. So they had 400,000. Verse 12, and the tribes of Israel sent men through all the tribe of Benjamin, saying, what wickedness is this is done among you? Verse 13, now therefore deliver the men, the children of Belial, the sons of bitches, sons of Belial, sons of bitches here, mainly these Jews, which are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and put away evil from Israel. Well, hey, they could have gone ahead and purged these Amorites. They could have gone ahead and said, hey, you Jews, started this shit. You Jews need to die. You're not very good slaves. We don't need to go ahead and even put up these Jews. But these Jews had somehow gotten into position of power in Gibeah, and therefore throughout Benjamin. So, pretty well, here are these Jews, they do this crap, and then these stupid, worthless Benjamite, trash, go ahead and go along with it. But the children of Benjamin would not hearken to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. Verse 14, but the children of Benjamin gathered themselves together out of the cities unto Gibeah to go out to battle against the children of Israel. So they're not only going to not give up the damn Jews, the sons of Belial, and their own, worthless trash, who, listen to these Jew boys, they're going to go ahead and they're going to fight all of Israel. Verse 15, the children of Benjamin were numbered at that time out of the cities 20 and 6,000 men that drew the sword, besides the inhabitants of Gibeon, which were numbered 700 chosen men. So you have 26,700 against 400,000. Verse 16, and all these people, there were 700 chosen men left-handed. Every man could sling stones at a hair's breadth and not miss. So the Benjamites were known for their left-handed slingers. Now, in many cases, it's sort of like the crack of a whip. The end of a bullwhip goes faster than the speed of sound. 1,082 feet per second at sea level, which is pretty well what the speed is of a .22 bullet. And so when they hurled the stone, in many cases, it would have a high velocity. Most of the time, they were cast out of clay. Sometimes they had smooth, round rocks. Sometimes they even had lead bullets. They call them lead bullets. They're shaped like footballs. And these 700 men could sling out probably 100 yards or so. These were missile weapons. These were accurate missile weapons. Verse 18, the children of Israel rose and went up to the house of Yahweh and asked counsel of Yahweh and said, which of us shall go up first to the battle against the children of Benjamin? And Yahweh said, Judah shall go up first. Judah probably was a more powerful tribe even than Ephraim. There was always some contention between Judah and Ephraim. And you hear about this later, quite a bit later on in the history of, you know, Israel, you know, the kingdom of Israel. The first king, breakaway king, was an Ephraimite. Jeroboam was an Ephraimite. And so there was always dissension between the children of Joseph and the children of Judah. But, you know, Yahweh says Judah shall go up first. Verse 19, children of Israel rose up in the morning and encamped against Gibeah. Verse 20, and the men of Benjamin went out to battle against Benjamin. And the men of Israel put themselves in array to fight against them at Gibeah. And the children of Benjamin came forth out of Gibeah and destroyed down to the ground of the Israelites that day 22,000 men. Well, they have 26,700 men. They have 26,000, you know, they have 26,000 men of the inhabitants of Gibeon were a select militia of Jew boys of 700,000. And here they are, 22,000 of the Israelites die the first day in this battle. This was sort of like Antietam and Gettysburg combined. Verse 22, and the people, the men of Israel, encouraged themselves and set themselves in their battle again in array in the place where they put themselves in array the first day. So here they are, they're going again up against Gibeah, but they've already lost 22,000 men. Verse 23, and the children, it says in parentheses, the children of Israel went up and wept before Yahweh until eventime and asked counsel of Yahweh, saying, shall I go up again to battle against the children of Benjamin, my brother? And Yahweh said, go up against him. Well, so Yahweh encourages them to do this here. They've asked Yahweh, and it seems like Yahweh wants to tell them, teach both the Israelites and later on the Benjamites a lesson. Because Yahweh has encouraged them. But guess what? They listened to Yahweh and they already lost 22,000 men. Verse 25. And Benjamin went forth against them out of Gibeah the second day and destroyed down to the ground of the children of Israel again, 18,000 men. All these drew the sword. So they've lost, what, 22,000 men the first day, 18,000 the next day. They've lost 40,000 men. They've lost 10% of their army. They've decimated the children of Israel. Sobering, isn't it? Verse 26. And all the children of Israel and all the people went up and came into the house of Yahweh and wept and sat there before the Lord and fasted that day even until even and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before Yahweh. Verse 27, the children of Israel inquired of the Lord, for the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh was there in those days. This is Mizpah. Verse 28, and Phinehas. See, Joshua and Eleazar are dead. Phinehas, who we first seen in Numbers chapter 25, killing the Simeonite prince and this Benjamite, or this Midianite princess. Phinehas is now the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days. So Phinehas is now the high priest, saying, shall I yet again go out to battle against the children of Benjamin, my brother, or shall I cease? And Yahweh said, go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into your hand. So, the third time is going to be the charm. The third time it is going to work. Verse 29, and Israel set liers to wait round about Gibeah. So they sent some scouts. They sent a picket line to sneak around Gibeah in the fields. Verse 30, and the children of Israel went up against the children of Benjamin on the third day and put themselves in array against Gibeah, as is other times. Verse 31, the children of Benjamin, they're feeling pretty high and mighty, went out against the people and were drawn away from the city, and they began to smite of the people and kill, as at other times in the highways, which one goeth out up to the house of God, Yahweh, and the other to Gibeah in the field, about 30 men of Israel. So 30 men more die. So what they're doing is that they are, you know, they are sure they're going to win. Third time's going to be a charm for them. Verse 32, and the children of Benjamin said, they are smitten down before us as at the first. But the children of Israel said, let us flee and draw them from the city into the highways. Verse 33, and all the men of Israel rose up out of their place, put themselves in array at Baal Tamar. And the liars in the way of Israel came forth out of their places, even out of the meadows of Gibeah. So here they are. They're going to pretend. They're going to pretend that they are, you know, that they are hurting. And verse 34, and there came against Gibeah 10,000 chosen men out of all Israel, and the battle was sore, but they knew not that evil was near them. Verse 35, and Yahweh smote Benjamin before Israel, and the children of Israel destroyed of the Benjamites that day 25,000 and 100 men. All these drew the sword. So other 26,000 men, 25,000 and 100 die. Verse 36, so the children of Benjamin saw they were smitten, for the men of Israel gave place to the Benjamites because they trusted unto the liars in wait, which they had set beside Gibeah. So they have 10,000 men. They've drawn the Benjamites out, and then they've turned on them. And here they are, caught. Here they are, caught, surrounded. And 25,100 of them die. Pretty well, you know, what, 95%? Better than 95% of their men have just died.
All they had to do was turn over the criminals, but no, they wanted to take
Jew Gibeonites, turn over these Jews, which were supposed to be slaves, who couldn't behave themselves, and their own wigger trash. They were supposed to do that crap, but they couldn't do it. But Yahweh also wanted the Israelites to learn a lesson as well, so they lost 40,000 men in battle during day one and day two. Remember?
Yeah.
Two battles. First day they lost 22,000. The next day they lost 80,000. 22 and 18 is 40. 40,000 men of Israel died. Right?
Yeah.
So Yahweh had his finger on the scale, didn't he? He determined who won and who lost, didn't he? Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's part of what Yahweh wanted to teach him. He said, I decide. I decide. Not you. I decide.
Okay.
Let's see. Gary, you still here with us? I guess Gary's still here. All right. Let's see. Verse 38. Now there was an appointed sign. There was an understanding between the men of Israel and the 10,000 liars in wait that they should make a great flame, you know, a great fire, a great beacon flame with smoke rise up out of the city. Verse 39, when the men of Israel retired in battle, Benjamin began to smite and kill all the men of Israel, about 30 persons, for they said, surely they are smitten down before us as in the first battle. Verse 40, but when the flame began to rise out of the city with a pillar of smoke, the Benjamites looked behind them, and behold, the flame of the city ascended up to heaven. Verse 41, and when the men of Israel turned again, the men of Benjamin were amazed, for they saw that evil was come upon them. And by evil it means that, you know, that their desert had overcome. Now this was around Gibeah. Now you're going to go ahead and find out that because these Israelites allowed these Jew boys to run wild, essentially now the Benjamins were to be treated like these Jew boy Canaanites were to be treated. And essentially their women and their children were not to be spared. No one was to be spared because, as I said before, they suffer from Jew pollution. Right?
Yeah.
42. So here's the Benjamin. They see the big, you know, they see the big fight, and pretty well, they know But they've lost. They know that they sided with Jews. They know that their doom is upon them. Verse 42. Therefore they turned their backs before the men of Israel unto the way of the wilderness, but the battle overtook them, and to them which came out of the cities they destroyed in the midst of them. Verse 43. Thus they enclosed the Benjamites around them. They had them surrounded, and chased them, and trod them down with ease over against Gibeah toward the sun rising. So essentially here they were in the west, and they destroyed the Benjamite army. Verse 44. And there fell a Benjamin, 18,000 men. All these were men of valor. So, pretty well, let's see. They had, what, 26,000 some? Of which 18,000 were Benjamites. I guess the rest were these Jew boy Amorites. Verse 45. And they turned and fled toward the wilderness unto the rock of Rimmon. And they were gleaned of them in the highways 5,000 men, and pursued hard after them unto Gibeon, slew 2,000 men of them. When it talks about glean, essentially the rest were chased down. They're running to the rocks. They're running to the badlands. And essentially they are chased down, and 5,000 and 2,000 more of them die. Verse 46. So all that fell that day of Benjamin were 25,000 men that drew the sword. All these were men of valor. Verse 47. But 600 men turned and fled into the wilderness unto the rock Rimmon, and abode in the rock Rimmon 4 months. Verse 48. The men of Israel turned again upon the children of Benjamin, and smote them with the edge of the sword, as well as the men of every city, as the beast, and all that came to hand, and they set fire to all the cities that they came to. So they not only burned Gibeah, they not only burned this city which was inhabited by these Amorites, they treated these Benjamites as if they were Canaanites. And they slew everything, every man, every beast. They slew every two-footed beast, every four-footed beast. They slew women and children. They killed everything. Because they looked at it, here were these Canaanite Jews which had essentially told the Benjamites, you don't have to pay with your lives for the evil we do, that we encourage you to do. Folks, this is exactly what is going on. Wiggers followed Jews. And the end result is death for Wiggers as well. When Wiggers follow Jews, and it comes time to destroy the Jews, the Wiggers who follow them, they die too. Men, women, and children. Okay? You got to understand is that Gibeah was not part of Benjamin. You know, they go ahead and they name certain things here. I think that these Gibeonites were allowed to bear arms, and they fought on the side of Benjamin. You understand what I'm saying? But they treated the Benjamites now like they would treat these, you know, here's the time, we're not going to have any more crap from these Gibeonites, we're just going to go ahead and kill them. You understand what I'm saying? Anyway, Gary, you still here? I don't know if Gary may be doing something else. Logan, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You understand why I'm reading this? The reason I'm reading this is because I want to make it clear, is if you're a Wigger and you follow a Jew and the Jew leads you into doing evil, when the Jew dies, you die too because of the evil you do. No, it doesn't matter. The Jew made me do it. The Jew, you know, convinced me to do it. The Jew forced me to do it. I mean, you know, I'm quite sure there was little 2 or 3 year old Benjamite girls who, you know, were pure blooded Benjamite. But didn't they die as well? Because these stupid Benjamites allowed these Jews to, you know, get out of their place as slaves.
The moral story is, if you've got a wife or a concubine, you should be willing to defend it with your own wife. And that
okay.
Levite was a coward.
Well, all right, all right. But I wanted...
The bigger message is, Martin, is that when the Levites were confronted by the other 11, when the Benjamites were confronted by the other 11 tribes, and they refused to hand over criminals, that means that they are they are one with the criminals, even though they didn't commit the crime. They're just as guilty as the damn bastards that did commit the crime.
That's right. That's right. Well, a lot of these, you know, it said Gibeah. It belonged to Judah. You do know who these Gibeonites were, don't you? They were these Amorites who had fooled. Who had fooled the children of Israel.
I don't know whether they're white trash niggers or whether they're dukes or niggers or what. If they commit a crime that's worthy of death, I'm not going to defend them. I'm not going to let the innocent people be destroyed for the wicked.
That's right, and so
they weren't willing to do that. They thought they were big and bad, and they got drawn out. Of course, they got slaughtered. But
that's right.
Even if they weren't outnumbered, they were siding with evil.
Yeah, they were siding with evil. But you know, these Gibeonites, they were Amorite Jews. I'll go to 2 Samuel. Let's go to 2 Samuel. Let's find out who these Gibeonites were again. 2 Samuel chapter 21. I'm going to go over 2 Samuel chapter 21. About how Yahweh sent a famine and, you know, starved a bunch of Israelites to death because of what Saul had done. 2 Samuel chapter 21. We're going to go ahead and figure out who these Gibeonites were. Though I already know who they are here. Then there was a famine in the days of David, 3 years, year after year. And David inquired of Yahweh, and Yahweh answered, is for Saul, for his bloody house, because he slew the Gibeonites. Who are the Gibeonites? Verse 2, and the king called the Gibeonites and said unto them, parentheses, now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but of the remnant of the Amorites. The remnant of the Amorites was a, what, I think the fourth son of Canaan? They were the blonde, blue-eyed Jew boys with not so big of noses. They were the Leslie Stahl kikes. They were the remnant of the Amorites, and the children of Israel had sworn unto them, and Saul sought to slay them in his zeal to the children of Israel and Judah. Well, Saul was a descendant about 400 years later. He was king, and he found a way to judicially murder these Gibeonites, the ones who had survived. Now, in many cases, probably were some Gibeonites who were not in the land of Benjamin, and they were Jews who were supposed to work, and they'd gotten out from under it, and there were still some of them left here. I'd hate to think that some of these, you know, that these Benjamites, I don't think they were among the 600 men. But Saul was descended from the 600 tough, fast-footed Benjamites in the Rock Rimmon. Now, the tribe of Benjamin was also scattered, just like all the tribes of Israel, from Great Britain to India. But those Benjamites who lived, you know, in the land of Benjamin, were destroyed.
I thought Iceland was supposed to be Benjamin.
Well, okay, but this has nothing to do with that. You know, we're not talking about modern Benjamin. We're talking about what happened, you know, around 1400 or so B.C. Okay? So essentially it says who the Gibeonites were. They were a remnant of the Amorites. Okay? And essentially the Gibeonites says, well, we don't want money or silver or gold from you. We want Saul's children to be put to death for him, you know, seeking, like you said, you know, verse 3 of 2 Samuel. Wherefore David said unto the Gibeonites, What shall I do for you, and wherewith shall I make the atonement, that you may bless the inheritance of Yahweh? Verse 4, And the Gibeonites said unto him, We will have no silver, nor gold to Saul, nor of his house, neither for us shall you kill any man in Israel. And he, David, said, What you say, that will I do for you. Verse 5, And he answered the king, David, The man that consumed us and that devised against us that we should be destroyed from remaining in any of the coasts of Israel. So here were these Jews. They're sort of like Paul Dembski Jews. They wanted to stick around the house of Israel. They wanted to stay within Israel. I think that some of these Gibeonites were not all together in Gibeah. I think some of them were somewhere else. They were scattered among the tribes of Israel, and they kept a low profile, and later on, Saul killed them, you know, judicially had some of them murdered by his tricks. And essentially, they demanded that Saul's house pay for that. Now, they couldn't go against the house of Israel. If they had gone ahead, I believe they killed a bunch of, I believe they set fire. They set fire to the town of Gibeah. You know what I mean? But it says they were the remnants of the Amorites. The Amorites were scattered. Hammurabi was an Amorite, was a blonde, blue-eyed Jew boy. I guess he was a smarter Jew boy, a more decent Jew boy, because he came up with the code of Hammurabi, and he had a rule to where if you make a house, you're a contractor, and you have shoddy construction, and it falls down and kills somebody, why, you yourself were put to death. I imagine that Hammurabi came up with that code because it was necessary. You know what I mean? But, in any case, we're talking about these Gibeonites. These Gibeonites were supposed to be nothing more than slaves. And yet, these men of Belial included Wigger Trash, I have no doubt. But it also included probably these Gibeonites, and said it belonged of Benjamin. It didn't say Gibeah was of Benjamin, it said it belonged to Benjamin. But you end up having like this old man in Ephraim.
I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that, all of Benjamin was willing to defend these criminals.
Criminals. And these criminals were Jews. These criminals were Amorite Gibeonites. And these criminals were probably of their own household. It may have very well been some of the princes who went and wanted the man pussy and then settled for the pussy pussy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, here, and Benjamite, the tribe of Benjamite was known, rightly or wrongly, as, engaging in many cases in sexual sins. Okay? So, rightly or wrongly. But you find out that because they treated the Israelites, I gotta wonder, what about that old man of Benjamin, of Ephraim, who lived in Gibeah, who essentially worked the fields with the hewers of wood and drawers of water, the Jews who were still behaving? Remember, he had a virgin daughter? Wonder what happened to him and what happened to her. Well, he may have very well died. Him and his virgin daughter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to be among evildoers when things go bad. You know what I mean? You don't want to be among the evil. You want to sort of get yourself away from the evil, even if you end up taking a loss here. I bet this old man, because it occurred not too long afterwards, I bet this old man of Ephraim, who lived in there along with his virgin daughter, I bet he died. He was an old man. He probably wasn't among the soldiers. I bet he died when Gibeah was burnt. Wouldn't you guess? Right? He lived in Gibeah. I bet him and his virgin daughter died. She may have been a lovely young daughter. Maybe she may have been an ugly young woman. Who knows? But I bet they died too. Because the Israelites treated the Benjamites like they were Canaanites, didn't they? You read about that. Verse 48 of Judges chapter 20, I'm back to the book of Judges. And the men of Israel turned upon the children of Benjamin and smote them with the edge of the sword as well. the men of every city, as the beast, and all that came to hand. And they set on fire all the cities that they came to. Essentially, they destroyed the entire tribe of Benjamin that lived, that has this allotment in Benjamin. Now, they didn't destroy Benjamites who lived in Britain or in Parthia or anywhere else, but they did destroy. They did destroy the tribe of Benjamin that was the small tribe that lived. They killed all the men, and then they set fire to their little Jew boys in Gibeon. They set fire to the men, and, you know, to the old men, the women, the children, and to their animals. Verse 20, you know, chapter 21 of Judges says, "The desolation of Benjamin bewailed. Now the men of Israel had sworn in Mizpah," you know, which is where the Ark of the Covenant and the tabernacle was. The tabernacle was a tent. Was essentially a costly tent of very rich cloth, which could be raised, packed up, and sent. They, you know, Yahweh was served in a tabernacle ever since, well, they had been wandering for the 40 years in the wilderness of the Sinai. Verse 2, "And the people came to the house of Yahweh," the tabernacle, "and abode there till even before Yahweh, and lifted up their voices and wept sore." Verse 3, "And said, O Yahweh, God of Israel, why has this come to pass in Israel that there should be today one tribe lacking in Israel?" Verse 4, "And it came to pass on the morrow that the people rose early and built there an altar and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings." Verse 5, "And the children of Israel said, Who is there among all the tribes of Israel that came not unto the congregation to the Lord? For they had made a great oath concerning him that came not up to the Lord to Mizpah, saying, He shall surely be put to death." They had demanded that everyone had to provide forces for the civil war. For they had made a great oath concerning him that came not to the Lord, to Yahweh and Mizpah, saying, He shall surely be put to death. Verse 6, "And the children of Israel repented them for Benjamin their brother, and said, There is one tribe cut off from Israel this day." Verse 7, "How shall we do for wives for them that remain, seeing we have sworn by Yahweh we will not give them of our daughters to wives?" Verse 8, "And they said, Which one is there of the tribes of Israel that came not unto Mizpah, unto Yahweh? And behold, there came none to the camp from Jabesh Gilead to the assembly." Now Jabesh Gilead, I believe, was on the east bank of the Jordan, and later on it was joined to the tribe of Benjamin because most of their daughters were married into the tribe of Benjamin. And later on they went and, you know, the tribe of Benjamin and the town of Jabesh Gilead, which I believe was on the east bank of the Jordan. Jabesh Gilead, okay, it was on the east bank. Gilead, you know, it was the town of Jabesh and Gilead. Gilead was the east bank of the, the east bank of the Jordan. Verse 9, "For the people were there were numbered, behold, there was none of the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead there." Verse 10, "The congregation sent thither 12,000 men of the valiantest, and commanded them, saying, Go and smite the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead with the edge of the sword, with the women and children." So you kill the men, the women, and children. Verse 11, This is the thing that you shall do. You shall utterly destroy every male and every woman which is slain by men." So essentially, you will save only the female virgin children. Verse 12, "And they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead 400 young virgins that had known no man by lying with any male." So I guess they checked, right? And they brought them into the camp to Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan. Verse 13, the whole congregation sent some to speak to the children of Benjamin that were in the rock Rimmon, and to call peacefully unto them. Verse 14, Benjamin came again at that time, and they gave them wives, which they had saved alive, of the women of Jabesh-Gilead, and yet so they suffered them not. Verse 15, the people repented them for Benjamin, because that the Lord had made a breach in the tribes of Israel. Verse 16, then the elders of the congregation said, how shall we do for wives for them that remains, seeing the women are destroyed out of Benjamin? So there's 400 virgins, but there's 600 Benjamite men hidden in this, you know, hidden in this broken up, you know, land here, in this, in the rock Rimmon. Hey, Logan, you make noise? Okay. Should I go ahead and finish up this verse here? This chapter?
Well,
I got half a chapter to do. I'll go ahead and mute you, and then, you know, it'll probably take about 10 minutes or less. Okay?
Okay, just mute me, and if I have to drift off, I'll drift off. Just mute me.
Okay. Alrighty. Anyway, and people repent, you know, verse 15, for Benjamin, because Yahweh had made a breach in the tribes of Israel. Verse 16, then the elders of the congregation said, how shall we do for wives for them that remain, seeing that the women are destroyed out of Benjamin? Verse 17, and they said, there must be an inheritance for them that escaped of Benjamin, that a tribe be not destroyed out of Israel. So they're going to bring them back like the buffalo. Verse 18, howbeit, we may not give them wives of our daughters, for the children of Israel have sworn, saying, cursed be he that gives a wife to Benjamin. Verse 19, so they're finding a way, if you can't go ahead and give them these girls, well, maybe we'll let the 200 men that remain take some of them. Verse 19, then they said, behold, there is a feast of the Lord of Yahweh in Shiloh, yearly in a place which is on the north side of Bethel, on the east side of the highway that goeth up from Bethel to Shechem, and on the south of Lebonah. Verse 20, therefore they command the children of Benjamin, saying, go and lie in wait in the vineyards. Verse 21, see, and behold, if the daughters of Shiloh come out to dance and dances, then come you out to the vineyards, and catch you every man his wife, the daughters of Shiloh, and go to the land of Benjamin. Verse 22, it shall be, when their fathers or brethren come unto us to complain, that we shall say unto them, be favorable unto them for our sakes. Behold, because we reserved not to each man his wife in the war, for you did not give unto them at this time that you should not be guilty. So you didn't give these girls away. The Benjamites just went ahead and took them, 200 men. Verse 23, and the children of Benjamin did so, and took them wives according to their number of them that danced, whom they caught, and they went, and returned to their inheritance, and repaired the cities, and dwelt in them. Verse 24, and the children of Israel departed thence at that time, every man to his tribe, and to his family, and went out from thence, every man to his inheritance. Verse 25, in those days there was no king in Israel, and every man did that which was right in his own eyes. So you have, within 50 years of the partial conquest of Canaan, a civil war, which was, of course, unnecessary, but it was done because the Benjamites had allowed these Amorite Jews to essentially run wild homosexually, and then went and killed this concubine, and as a result, Gibeah was burnt up, and so were most of the Amorite Jews. Some of them probably were also there, who were scattered out among the coasts of Israel. And later on, 300, 400 years later, Saul did his best to find them and use his tricks to kill them. And then later on, he had to pay the penalty for essentially doing wrong. But this was after David had done wrong by Yahweh and essentially took the wife of Uriah the Hittite. Anyway, I'm going to mute Logan. And that's pretty well what I wanted to discuss here, is I wanted to, you know, discuss to where you had civil war. You had civil war among Israel, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You had people doing wrong, you had people doing stupid crap, and so they died. And, you know,
anytime you side with evil and evildoers, you're just as guilty. I mean, if you don't speak out against evil, you're just as guilty as the people doing the evil.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Oh, well, they're from our tribe. They're our slaves. They're part of our community. Who gives a shit? I don't give a damn if it's a white person, an Israelite, or a non-Israelite. If they're doing evil, what does it say according to Yahweh's laws?
Well, they were to be judged for their crimes and put to death.
Yeah.
However, if it was collusion and doing evil, you know, along with a Jew, you know, because these Gibeonites were Jews of a sort.
Yeah.
It's not only the men who did the evil. It's the quote innocent women and children who died too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't side with the Jew and to do evil. You don't allow the Jew to get in power. The bad part was that this sort of thing was already in the works when Joshua and the Israelite elders didn't ask Yahweh, and so they cut a peace treaty with these Gibeonite Amorites. And, you know, in case Roxy wants me to go ahead and turn it to 12 here, I'm probably going to I need to mute this here. They're making a big deal about speaking about Jew boys. I mean, heck, that, you know, that princess that you know, these other characters married, why, she's a Jewess. And pretty well, Princess Diane, they said that she was part Hindu nigger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, heck, it's this quote royal family and they're just a bunch of mongrels. Speaking of Jews and mongrels, huh? Well, I'll try to get it to where, heck. Well, finish up doing what you're doing, woman. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and Dr. Roxy here in about maybe, you know, 15 minutes or something like that. I think I'm going to go ahead and finish the show here in about 15 minutes. Anyway, the reason I brought this is that still, even though people did whatever they wanted, even though they backslid, this was still, the book of Judges, Samuel was the last judge in Israel. You know what I mean? He was the last, you know, he was the last before the king, and still Yahweh preferred Samuel, a judge, to setting up a king. But they insisted upon one. And Yahweh chose Saul first. He was of these Benjamites. So this was a very, between Saul and this Benjamite Israelite war, Benjamin was pretty well was not a big tribe to begin with, but being decimated to 600 men, they were even a smaller tribe. Now they may have been fertile, but they still. You know, even by the time of Saul, they were the least tribe here, and they were still remembered for essentially doing something stupid that required for most of them to be killed. And Saul was a descendant of one of these 600 men who had survived. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So later on, it did color, of course, it colored Saul's, sort of like South Carolinians here. They're sort of noted for being secessionists here, although thanks to having Lindsey Graham here, this here Whigger faggot here, they're sort of known for being stupid too. But they got a faggot and a nigger for their United States senators. You know what I mean? So anyway, what I want to say is that, you know, what I wanted to bring up here is that Jews had something to do with it. The Gibeonites were Amorite Jews. They were lying Jews, and they had gotten out from under their slavery to where here they are. They're feeling big and bad enough to where they want to have homosexual relationships with visiting Levites, and they're, you know, they're simply raping concubines. And this Levite, I'm not saying he was a, you know, he seemed to have got off sort of scot free. He had a whorish girlfriend. He sort of got tired of being alone. He sort of got to where he wandered. He went down there. He saved, you know, 4 or 5 days. Then he finally leaves on the last day. He don't have enough sense to just simply, okay, daddy, you can come visit her, whatever, here, whenever. But essentially, we're going to head on out. He didn't have enough sense to just leave of a morning. And here he is, he has a wonderful idea, I'm going to go ahead and cut her into pieces. And essentially he wasn't, you know, he was not much of a man now, was he? But he got off sort of scot-free. He sort of got off scot-free. So, pretty well, the main lesson that was learned is if you're a stupid Whigger and you let Jews rule you, and you don't obey Yahweh's law because you're, you know, being led by the dick or the nose by Jews, you deserve whatever the heck you get. And that might very well mean death for you and your family. Don't follow Jews. You know what I mean? Right? So that is pretty well the thing I want. But I also wanted to point out is that this, you know, the history of our people is quite important, because you see that our people do the same stupid crap again and again and again and again. When I hear people talk about how they're atheists and agnostics, they're not atheists, they're not agnostics, they're solipsists. They worship themselves. But they don't have balls enough to go ahead and just simply say, hey, I worship myself. I'm just a self-worshipping retard. No, they've got to run around and do things half-assed. Just like Christ said, because you're neither hot nor cold, I'm going to spew you out of your mouth. Christ would rather, if you're going to be a total Whigger ass clown, he'd rather you just simply said, I worship myself. Rather than pretend to serve two masters, right?
Yeah. Hey, Mark. I'm getting another call. How much longer are you going
to? I'm going to go ahead and finish up. Gary, I'm not sure if you're listening. I think you are. But what I'm going to do is I want to read the history of our people, why they do the same stupid crap over and over and over again, and make the point that Whiggers have not changed in 7,000 years, or in 6,000 years, or 5,000, or 4,000, or in this case, 3,400 years. They have not changed in 2,000 years. They've not changed in 1,000 years. They've not changed in 100 years. Whiggers are still Whiggers. And they do stupid Whigger crap. And they end up having to pay for it with their own blood because they're stupid. So don't be a stupid Whigger if you want to live. And certainly not if you want to have eternal life. But I wanted to bring the history of our people to show that we do the same stupid crap again, 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 again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to point out, understand dual seed line Christian identity. You can't understand our racial religion unless you understand the history of a race. And that is why when I've covered the book of Jasher, I've also wanted to cover the book of Judges, you know, where we had, well, instead of cowboys and Indians, we had, well, cowboys and Jew boys, to where we did stupid crap here back then. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and call it a night. I'm going to go ahead and say, you know, hail victory. I'm not sure what Gary's doing. Looks like Gary, I guess Logan hung up here. Anyway, Gary, I don't know if you're in, but I'm going to go ahead and call it a night. I'm going to... Oh, okay, Gary, did you hear most of what was going on?
Heard it all. Yeah, they're very, very good. And nothing's changed under the sun. Yanni Bai, he said there's nothing new under the sun.
That's right. Wiggers are still ass clowns. They don't change much now, do they? They do the same stupid crap. They were doing the same stupid crap 3,400 years ago, and they had to suffer for it, didn't they?
Yeah. When it comes to dumb Israelites and ignorant Israelites, they just seem to keep coming.
They don't seem to learn nothing. Don't seem to learn nothing. They learn something for a little while after there's much blood, after there's much pain and sorrow. I mean, like Benjamin Franklin said here, experience teaches a dear school, but fools will learn in no other will learn their lessons no other way, right?
That's exactly true.
I mean, most people do not learn from the mistakes of other people. They have to learn from their own mistakes, and sometimes they don't even learn from that. Because they're idiots. So what you do is, it takes time to simply say, hey, I'm not going to do any more stupid crap. I'm going to behave myself. I'm going to do what's right. The law of Yahweh is written in my heart, so I'm going to obey Yahweh, and I'm going to be rewarded by that. But, the reason for the Bible and the reason I wanted to cover our history is to point out that essentially the same stupid behavior led to what happened to Benjamin affected Saul. And what Saul did affected David. It affected the rest of Israel, as well as the Benjamites. The Israelites lost 40,000 men 2 days, 22,000, 18,000 next day. They lost a bunch of men. They lost a tenth of their army. And then, there was, we were sort of speculating what happened to the old Ephraimite. What happened to his virgin daughter? They more than likely died. So, that's cruel. That's cruel. Well, no, that's what is. And we need to learn and we need to profit as much as we can from what we should have learned already. Anyway, Gary, I'm going to go ahead and call it a night. I hope you, and next week, I'll go ahead and cover more of the Wild Wild West, or more of the Wild Wild Middle East, of Cowboys and Jew Boys, and the Book of Judges. So folks, we're going to, I'll see you Thursday. If TalkShoe behaved, TalkShoe was very, very nice to me, because I snuck up on it tonight. Anyway, I'm going to call it a night. I'm going to say, hail victory.
Okay, now,
Yahweh bless here. Hail victory, may Yahweh he bless. And good night.
Call recording has been completed.